Welcome to the National Community Church Podcast. We're thrilled to be able to share this weekend message with you from Pastor Heather Zimple, our discipleship pastor at NCC. If you'd like to subscribe, find us on iTunes or go to theaterchurch.com.
About 10 years ago, Ryan and I started trying to have kids. And that process turned out to be a lot longer and more difficult than we had anticipated. And at some point during that time, we changed our prayer and we stopped praying, God give us kids, and we started praying, God make us parents. And that's when it happened. Not pregnancy, the 20-somethings arrived. They flooded into our lives, into our houses. They lived with us. They ate our food. They went on vacation with us. They celebrated birthdays. They ran errands with us and eventually became older brothers and sisters to our now 2-year-old. Ryan and I fell in love with a generation that was really just a few years younger than us, but seemed in many ways so different from us. And what I want to do this weekend is take some of the conversations that I've been having on my front porch over the past few years and bring them to the platform. Now, that's incredibly risky because dialogue is always better than declaration, but we're going to go for it anyway. Now, I realize this weekend that we've got a lot of people across all of our campuses that are not in that 20 to 30-something millennial generation. For instance, we've got our uprising students, and we've got our college students, and congratulations, you're part of Generation Z. So this weekend, you can just kind of tune me out. You can ignore me, or I would actually encourage you to lean in because there may still be some things that are beneficial to you, or maybe even better yet, the millennials will be your bosses one day. And so maybe this weekend I can give you a little bit of insight into how they're wired. For those of you that are here this weekend and you're older, you're on the other side of the millennial generation, I just want to encourage you to lean in as well. Because regardless of where you are, even on your faith journey, I mean, maybe you're here this weekend and you don't know what you think about Jesus. You don't know what you think about the church. Maybe this is your first time to church or your first time back. The reality is what we're going to talk about this weekend isn't even necessarily a church thing. It's just a people thing. Because all of us have a relationship with some kid in their 20s, a friend, a neighbor, a coworker, a family member. And so I'm hopeful that what we talk about this weekend is just going to be helpful to all of us that are trying to navigate intergenerational relationships and conversations. And for those of you that are here and you do claim to be a follower of Jesus, then what we're going to talk about isn't optional. Because you're called to make disciples. And you're called to pass your faith on to the next generation. And if we want to give the next generation an opportunity to stand on our shoulders and to blaze new trails for them, then we have got to genuinely know them and love them and believe in them. To make disciples who will make disciples who will make disciples. So let me just start off by giving us a snapshot of the 4 generations that are currently alive on earth today. The first are the traditionalists. These are those that were born before 1945. It's my grandmother's generation. She's turning 100 this summer. She's awesome. This is the generation of World War I, World War II, the Great Depression, known as the greatest generation, known for their strong work ethic. And then after the economic expansion and the peace that followed World War II, we saw the arrival of the baby boomers. Born between 1946 and 1964. This is my parents' generation. It's the generation that faced some critical inflection moments in history, moments that included the civil rights movement, Woodstock, the Vietnam War, and Watergate. And then after that generation, between about 1965 and 1980, we have Gen X. It's my generation. The Atari, the Walkman, MTV, the AIDS crisis, missing children on milk cartons. This is the generation that responded to everything in culture with either cynicism or parody. And then after Gen X, we see the rise of the millennials. Born between 1980 and 2000, they are the largest generation on earth today. They were born at a time where they saw things like Columbine, Y2K, September 11 drastically change their worlds. It's the first generation to see social media and technology define so much of their lives. The technology is not a second language to them. They are technology natives. And this is the generation that we're going to be talking to, encouraging this weekend. Time Magazine printed this. They have trouble making decisions. They would rather hike in the Himalayas than climb a corporate ladder. They have few heroes, no anthems, no style to call their own. They crave entertainment, but their attention span is as short as one zap of a TV dial. They hate yuppies, hippies, and druggies. They postpone marriage because they dread divorce. They sneer at Range Rovers, Rolexes, and red suspenders. What they hold dear are family life, local activism, national parks, mountain bikes. They possess only a hazy sense of their own identity, but a monumental preoccupation with all the problems the preceding generation will leave for them to fix. Before you start thinking about your 22-year-old nephew or your 28-year-old cubicle mate, for those of you that are older, this article was actually printed in 1990. What's being talked about here is actually my generation, Generation X. And I bring it up because I think we have to be very careful in a conversation like this that we don't confuse what is true of a specific generation with what is just true of a certain period of age. That we don't confuse what is a millennial thing with what is just a young person thing. So before we start throwing out labels, let's just try to make some of those distinctions. But there are other things that make the millennial generation very unique. They were the first generation that got trophies for participating. The first generation to always get a toy in the bag. They were the first generation to be so instantly connected and have information at their fingertips. It's the first generation that has not had to ask a preceding generation how to do stuff because they can just Google it. So that's caused a bit of a fracturing of the generations. They are the generation that has become accustomed to leveling up whenever they master a set of skills in the video game. And so before we start throwing out words like lazy or shallow or entitled or selfish or privileged, I think it's just helpful to understand that this generation is a product of the culture we handed to them. We have engineered them to maybe be those things. Here are some of the questions and conversations that I've had with 20-somethings throughout the past few years that have just highlighted for me some of the differences. When I was asked the question, Heather, what movies did you watch over and over and over again as a kid? And I had a really hard time trying to think of an answer to that. And I realized it's because I didn't watch movies over and over and over as a kid because we didn't have a VCR until we were in the fifth grade. The millennial generation could watch their favorite cartoon anytime they wanted it. And so they had life on demand. When I heard the statement, I don't like going to the movie theaters, and I couldn't understand this. How could you not love going to the movie theater? Well, it's cheaper and it's more convenient to just watch it at home. For the rising generation, convenience trumps the experience. That entertainment is more about self-consumption than about a communal experience. How did I do? The millennial generation is seeking constant and immediate and regular feedback. Can we do this together? Doing things as a tribe is important for the emerging generation. Where's my prize? They're expecting that level up when they've mastered a set of skills. Email is snail mail. Heard that from one of our proteges one time. And I realized that for the rising generation, communication and technology are inextricably linked. Just highlighting some of the differences. Now, I am so excited that at NCC, the majority of the people that are a part of this community are in their 20s and 30s. I love the rising generation because you are passionate. You're changing the world. You are making a difference. You are optimistic. You are team players. And those are the kind of people that I want my life to be a part of. So look, if you use social media this week, thank a millennial. If you like Tom's Shoes or Warby Parker or other socially conscious brands, thank a millennial. If you like Sweetgreen or you've used Airbnb, thank a millennial. If you want to see education and healthcare expanded to places around the world that don't currently have it, thank millennials, because they are the ones that are leading organizations that are making that kind of change in the world. About 2,000 years ago, a man by the name of Paul wrote a letter to a young leader named Timothy. Paul is a guy that had been hunting down Christians. He was trying to stop the movement of Jesus around the world, and then Jesus showed up and wrecked his life. And he became the greatest church planner of his generation, probably of all time. Timothy began to go on these church planning expeditions with him, and eventually Paul placed Timothy as the pastor at the church of Ephesus. Ephesus was the fourth largest city of the ancient world, about 250,000 people. And at the time Paul wrote this particular letter, we're going to look at one of his letters to Timothy. When he wrote the first letter to Timothy, Timothy was probably in his late 20s or early 30s. And we have this letter preserved for us today in our New Testaments. And in 1 Timothy 4:12, he gives this young pastor who's leading a congregation of people that are much older than him, some wisdom. And he says this: don't let anyone think less of you because you're young. Be an example to all believers in what you say and the way you live, in your love, your faith, and your purity. Now, when I was a young leader, this is how I read this verse. Old people, God says you can't look down on me. You got to let me lead. You got to respect me. Can't disregard me because the Bible says so. But what Paul is saying here is, Timothy, look, it's not that he's saying don't let anybody disrespect you or disregard you. He's saying don't give anyone any reason to disrespect you or disregard you, but be an example. The word example here in the original Greek means pattern. He's saying, Timothy, establish good patterns in your life so that your life becomes a pattern for others to follow. In what you say and how you live, in your love, your faith, and your purity. Be an example in what you say. The original language here carries with it the idea of speaking intelligently. To be an example in what you say, and I'm talking to 20s and 30-somethings now. Being an example in what you say means elevating your language. Elevating your language. Ephesians 4:29, which this is actually a letter that Paul wrote to the entire church that Timothy was pastoring. It says, don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. Elevating your language means that we recognize that our words carry tremendous power. That our words have the potential to build up or to tear down, to breathe life or to bring destruction. So elevate your language so that you bring encouraging words and life-giving words. I think elevating your language also means that instead of having all the answers, you ask good questions. Good. Now, I think a lot of times we think in order to elevate our words, in order to amplify our voices, we've got to make sure everybody around us knows that we know all the answers. But elevating your language actually means that you put yourself in a posture of asking good questions instead of having all the answers. I realize that the people that I respect most that are in the traditionalist generation and the boomer generation are the ones that they drive me crazy, because when I'm with them, they won't stop asking me questions. People like Dick Foth have lots of answers that I want to hear, but instead, every time I'm around him, he's just asking me questions. He's insatiably curious. Elevate your language. Ask good questions instead of having all the answers. I think elevating our language also means that we lead with honor. Romans 12:10 says, outdo one another in showing honor. The real competition is not a race to see who can get ahead. It's not to see who can clamber up the corporate ladder. The real competition is, can we outdo one another in showing honor? Honor to those who've gone before us. Honor to our peers. And so when you feel like you've been undermined, when you're confronted by your boss, or when you have to bring up a hard conversation with your boss, or when you find yourself in the comparison game with your peers, what does the honoring response look like? See, what you when you honor publicly, you get the opportunity to influence privately. Elevate your language. Be an example in what you say. Pattern your conversation in such a way that you're an example worth following. And then Paul says to Timothy, be an example in the way that you live. I'm going to break that down into being humble, being hungry, and hustle. Humility is asking the question, who am I? Who am I? It focuses on our posture. Now, I think in our 20s and 30s, we spend a lot of time trying to figure out what our purpose is. Or if you're a follower of Jesus, we might use the phrase what our calling is. What is God calling me to do? And I think that that's a great question to be asking, because in your 20s and 30s, you're making the decisions that you'll spend the rest of your life managing. But the reality is that understanding or awareness of our calling or our purpose, we have no control over if, when, or how that will become apparent. So what if instead of focusing so much energy on finding the answer to that question, we focus our time and our effort and our energy on developing the character that it's going to take to sustain that calling? Walking in humility and integrity and goodness. I think we need to ask, what does God want me to do in my life? That's an important question. But maybe more important is asking, who does God want me to become? Wow. Walking in humility. Now look, humility does not mean having a low self-esteem. It means having an accurate self-esteem. That means you're not trying to be someone who you're not, and you're not downplaying who you are. Humility isn't thinking less of yourself, it's just thinking of yourself less. So walk in humility. I believe that if we will posture ourselves in humility, God will position us exactly where we need to go. And then there's hunger. That addresses the question of, where am I going? Paul says, look, Timothy, be an example. You can be an example that all the believers everywhere will follow. The ball is in your court. Play offense with your life. But here's the trick. When it comes to hunger, we've got to play offense without giving in to offense. There's a big difference between playing offense and giving in to offense. Any work that is pursued for the kingdom of God that is rooted in offense will never experience the grace of God. Wow. We've got to be really careful that we don't give in to the temptation of believing that every difficulty, every barrier, every lost opportunity happens because we are young. Does that happen? Absolutely. Some of you aren't paid what you're worth. Some of you haven't gotten the promotions and the opportunities simply because someone thought you were too young. But if I have a little bit of permission tonight just to challenge you, it could be that you just need to keep your head down and walk in humility and learn all you can and get better at the job you're doing. You might need to just recognize that you have been given a small stage and a dim spotlight right now so that you can take some risks and make a mistake and experience some colossal failures when no one is watching. It's a lot better to fail in your 20s when no one is watching than when you're in your 40s and 50s and the world is watching. Wow. Anonymity can be an incredible blessing to you in your 20s. So take advantage of it. And then finally, there's the question of hustle, and it's how am I going to get there? How am I going to get there? I think that in many ways that begins by showing up early, by blowing past expectations, going the extra mile, doing the little things like they're the big things and not making a big deal about it, doing the things no one else wants to do without being demanding to be seen and without demanding reward. I think it means that we do things without a sense of entitlement. Now, listen to me very carefully, because I do not believe entitlement is a millennial issue. Entitlement is a people issue. I was looking back at my journal and realized that I was dealing with entitlement last summer, and so I started making a list of all the things that I needed to play offense on so that I would kill entitlement in my heart. Things like gratitude kills entitlement, curiosity kills entitlement, service kills entitlement, community and celebration and worship kill entitlement. Millennials, kill the entitlement in your heart. It's not because it's a millennial issue, it's a people issue. But if you can get a handle on this when you're younger, you're going to be able to walk in freedom when you're older, because you'll control your appetites instead of allowing your appetites to control you. I think hustle means that we walk in wisdom. Paul also said this. He said, be careful how you live. Make the most of every opportunity. Live as wise and not as unwise, because the times are evil. So don't be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. I think a lot of times in our 20s, 30s, we're trying to find that line between right and wrong. Or that line between sin and where I can be okay with God. And I think that might be the wrong question. Because there are certain things that aren't wrong, but they're also not wise. And I want to encourage you to be people that walk in wisdom. Wisdom is asking questions like, is it wise to invest my time there? Is it wise to spend my money on that? Is it wise to continue to put myself in these relationships of people that are turning me into a bad version of myself? Is it wise to get in a relationship with that person who doesn't share my values? Is it wise to go to that party? Is it wise to have one more drink? Walk in wisdom. Be an example in how you live. Walk in humility. Play offense, but don't give in to offense. And choose wisely. And then Paul goes on to tell Timothy, be an example also in your love. That word love is the Greek word agape. It means an unconditional and self-sacrificing love. It's the same word that Jesus used when he told his disciples in John 13:35, I've got a new command for you to love one another. And your love for one another will prove to the world that you're my disciples. And then Jesus escalates it even further. He says, not only love each other, love your neighbor. And then he escalates it beyond any sense of decency and says, love your enemy. And as Jesus continues to escalate this idea of loving other people, it amplifies. And we realize that when we love people the way Jesus loved people and the way he commanded us to love people, our love becomes very, very loud. And our love, in turn, amplifies our words and our actions. Now, for those of you here this weekend that claim to follow Jesus, what would people say is the loudest thing about your life? The church. What would culture today say is the loudest thing about the church? And if it's not our love, then we might need to realign a little bit. Let your love be loud. I think it begins by looking at who you're bringing around your tables. Might be your dining table. It might be your coffee table. It might be a table at the lunchroom at your workplace. It might be a table at the place where you eat at your university. It might be the table at your favorite coffee house. Who is sitting around that table? Because those people will change the trajectory of your life. Because the people that are around your table eventually kind of become your personal board of directors. Do you like people that don't look like you? Are you willing to learn from people who don't think like you? Do you engage people that are very, very different from you? And when you're engaging with people, are you adding value? When others are gossiping, are you bragging about people behind their back? When others are being critical, do you find creative solutions? When others are ignoring the outcast, are you engaging? When others walk past and look away, do you lean in? Let your love be loud. I want to encourage you this weekend to jump into one of our small groups. Across all of our locations, every group this summer is happening around the table. Some of my closest friends still today, my husband Ryan, I met in an NCC small group 18 years ago. It changed the trajectory of my life. And they've also become my personal board of directors. Let your love be loud. Join a group this summer. Next, Paul says to Timothy, be an example in your faith. And I believe that Paul is saying, make your faith your own. Now, many of you here this weekend grew up in church. And because you grew up in church, you adopted your parents' faith. Because when you're young, you believe what adults tell you. Because that's what you do when you're a kid. You believe what adults tell you to believe. And what happened is many of you grew up, but your faith didn't grow up with you. And so you found that the age-appropriate answers you were given to very difficult questions in life don't withstand the current realities that you're facing. Or the Bible tells me so, reasoning doesn't stand against the winds of academic thought and cultural philosophy. And if you're here this weekend and that's you, and you've been handed maybe an irrational version of faith or an anti-science version of faith, I want to encourage you to lean in and discover Jesus for yourself. Make your faith your own. I think that begins by actually digging into this book and finding out for yourself what it says. Because some of you have found yourselves in very awkward places of having to defend something that you've never actually even read. And so when we think about the people that wrote this, I mean, there's James and Jude. They were the brothers of Jesus. Aren't you curious to know what they say about him? James and Jude declared that Jesus was Lord. As Andy Stanley might say, what would it take for your brother to convince you to worship him? We should be interested to know what James and Jude have to say about Jesus. Or Paul, who was out killing Christians and eventually became the greatest church planner of a generation or of an age or of the entire history of the world. What does he have to say about Jesus? And then there's Luke, who interviewed dozens of eyewitnesses to the life of Jesus. Whether or not you believe that everything in here is true is not the point. We should be interested in reading this because it's fascinating. Now, I want to be very careful this weekend. I believe that the Bible is true. I believe it is infallible. I believe that it is authoritative. But my faith has nothing to do with what the winds of culture tell me. It has to do with the fact that 2,000 years ago, a Jewish man predicted his own death and resurrection and pulled it off. Now, if you predict your own death and resurrection and pull it off, I'm willing to hinge my faith on that. Right. And then you've got this ragtag bunch of disciples who changed the world. It is an unlikely scenario, and yet they risk their lives on the idea that this event actually happened. Discover faith for yourself. And what's interesting about this verse is the original rendering of that word faith. It's better translated faithfulness or trustworthiness. It's really more about right living than right belief. Sometimes I think we have to act our way into right ways of thinking. And so maybe for you this weekend, an act of making your faith your own is jumping in, getting involved, joining a missions team, beginning to serve on the weekends, getting plugged in to a tables group, becoming faithful, and then finding that faith grabs hold of you. Make faith your own. Discover Jesus for yourself. Make it strong and make it active. Be an example in what you say and how you live in love, in faith, and in purity. Now, when I was studying this verse, I looked up the original Greek of purity because I was really hoping it just kind of meant like purity of heart. And that would give us a nice little wrap up. Nope, it's talking about sex. Just plain sex. He's saying be an example in your sex life. Establish good patterns of purity in your life. was really hoping it was just pure of heart. Scholar Christopher West said, to find that which is most sacred in this world, look to that which is most violently profaned. To discover what is meant to be most sacred, look for what the culture has most violently profaned. Paul is writing to a young leader in the city of Ephesus, in a very sex-saturated culture, and saying, Timothy, be an example in purity. He's saying, Timothy, you were created in the image of God, and the people around you are also created in the image of God. They are image bearers. They are stamped with my likeness. And God says, I made sex. I designed it. I created it. It was my idea, and I gave it to the man and the woman to be a blessing, yeah, to be enjoyed within the context of marriage. Yeah. And he didn't give it as a rule to deprive us, but as a guardrail to elevate the image of God. Now, this is a sensitive conversation because for the millennial generation, those of you that grew up in church also dealt with the purity movement. So I know that for many of you, this term is loaded. And for many of you, there's a positive association with that word, and there was a positive experience. For those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, it was purity balls, purity rings, purity commitments. Some of you are thinking, wow, I'm glad I didn't grow up in the church. This is purely weird. But there are those that would say, no, that was a blessing in my life. But while it was rooted biblically and the intentions were good, it also had unintended consequences of heaping shame on those that made decisions that were outside God's guardrails. And if that's you here this weekend, I want you to listen very carefully. Jesus broke his body to remove shame for decisions you've made with yours. I want you to hear that this weekend, that purity is a daily pursuit. Be an example. Establish patterns in your life. Imagine with me just a moment, a generation that is pursuing God with everything they've got. Oh, let me say this before I forget about it. This word purity, Paul used it again just a few verses later to Timothy when he said to Timothy, let me read it. He says, Timothy, treat older women as you would your mother and treat younger women with all purity as you would your own sisters. So Paul's telling Timothy, here's how you handle the purity test, okay? Every woman that you encounter, unless it's your spouse, treat her as you would your mother or your sister. What if we just decided to do that? Guys, every woman that you encounter, treat her as either your mother or your sister. Women, every guy that you encounter, treat him as you would a father or a brother. It's about how we relate to one another within the guardrails that God's given us. It's about stewarding the image of God that he's given to us and honoring the image of God in others. Now again, just imagine with me for a moment. I have so much excitement about the rising generation. I see so much hope, so much potential. And imagine even more the potential of a generation that is going wholly and completely after the things of God. Imagine a generation that is not holding the fort but is taking ground. Imagine a generation that is expanding the kingdom of God on earth by healing the sick, by feeding the hungry, by comforting the afflicted. Imagine a generation that finds its prophetic voice. I believe that that's the generation that's coming. That's the generation that is sitting across all of our 8 campuses today in their 20s and 30s. And I want to encourage you to be an example that all of us can follow. Elevate your language. Be an example in the way you live. Play offense, but don't give in to offense. Let your love be loud. Make your faith your own and discover Jesus for yourself. and steward the image of God that he has stamped in your heart and honor the image of God in the lives of others. Usually we end our gatherings by inviting the band up and responding with a song, but I want to do something a little different this weekend. I just want to bless and speak into and charge that generation of millennials. And so across all of our campuses now, if you are in that age range, your 20s, your 30s, you're in that millennial labeled generation, I just want you to receive this blessing. For those of you that are older, I just would ask that you would join me in praying. Father, when you set the planets in orbit, you saw this generation here and now. You called them to this place, to this time, for a specific purpose. May they know who they are because they know whose they are. May they know what you've called them to do because they follow so closely behind you that they see their calling lives on the other side of obedience. May they know how to uniquely fulfill their purpose in this specific season because they have the ability to hear your voice clearly and they have the courage and discernment to do what you say. May this be the generation who elevates political conversations, religious conversations, justice conversations, intergenerational conversations. May this be the generation who doesn't hold back, who plays offense but doesn't give into offense. May this be the generation whose love silences all criticisms that culture might have of the church. May this be the generation whose faith is strong and active, who stewards the image of God in their lives and honors the image of God in others. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord shine his face upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Blessings on you. Blessings on your children. And blessings on your children's children. In Jesus' name, amen.